I'm Tom Slaw, the Executive Director of TSIA. Welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. In August of 2024, we did an episode with Brent Grimes, the CEO of Reef AI, to discuss the emerging use cases of AI to forecast revenue and predict churn risks. Well, we all know that AI capabilities have massively improved since 2024. So today we are bringing Brent back for what I'm calling a what the hell has been actually happening episode. And we are going to get an update on Reef, on the world of AI startups, and how AI is changing revenue management workflows for companies everywhere. So let's get the insight engine humming here. Brent, welcome back. It's great to see you. You know, you and I were emailing back and forth about the pressure that SaaS companies are under. And you cited this study that I think the Bank of America did that said over 100 public SaaS companies showed a 14-point decline in NRR, which is, you know, for high-flying growth SaaS companies, that's brutal. So this is putting a lot of focus on retaining and renewing customers. It's tough out there for these companies. How is this environment changing, you know, what you sell, what Reef does? Just kind of give us a sense of the landscape right now.
Yeah, first of all, thank you. I feel honored to be back for my second appearance and excited to dig in and talk about what we've seen over the last year and a half since we last did this. And so to your question, you're right. It is, I think, hard times for a lot of, especially enterprise SaaS companies out there. And I think there's several pressures. You talked about the 14-point decline in median NRR since 2021. And I think there's several factors that are really coming into play. One, as I think is, you know, no surprise, AI is putting a lot of pressure on traditional business models, especially seat-based licensing, where there are new assumptions around how many people you need to do certain things. Whether that's completely backed up by data or justified or not, organizations are just putting a stake in the ground and saying, we're reducing team size, we're forcing ourselves to do more with less because it's going to make us do the hard work to figure out how to get more efficient, how to use the new tools, and how to really take advantage of the next generation of what's possible. And so I think that's putting a tremendous amount of pressure on these traditionally predictable and successful SaaS businesses that suddenly are fighting on a couple of fronts. One is, how do they continue to retain customers that are maybe getting value out of their solutions, but now have smaller teams and are looking at other ways to either complement or replace what they're doing. And two is, they have their own visions of how to stay relevant and how to create their own products that are AI first and really transition those customers over to those new products. And so what we've seen is that we're still in a mode where a lot of these companies are struggling and honestly just don't have good answers in terms of how to stem the tide in terms of churn pressures or slowed NRR growth. So I think the market is in desperate need of reliable solutions that directly hit NRR performance head on. And frankly, for a lot of these companies, it's buying them time to execute that strategy, right? If they can put processes and capabilities in place that will allow them to reduce churn, that will allow them to get better at upselling what they have and just get better in the margins, it keeps their revenue higher, it keeps their growth rate higher, it keeps their market cap and valuation higher, and buys them time and capital to invest in the tools that are really going to carry them forward into the future. So the companies that are being really proactive about, we have to secure our base as an asset for making these new investments, are starting to differentiate from the companies that are really struggling to figure that out and in a very, very reactive mode right now.
It is one of the most challenging environments I've ever seen in my time in tech. And so let's talk about, again, what companies can actually do and get kind of the update there. So when you look at it, at deploying AI to help protect that NRR, the benefits there are things like, you know, just doing a better job on forecast accuracy. Is it more about really identifying risks so you can get ahead of that, reduce churn? I mean, where's the biggest bang for the buck you see with your customers?
Yeah. So I think if you were to weigh, okay, should we get better at forecasting? Should we reduce churn? Should we get better at driving growth within customers? Mm-hmm. I think that as important as forecast predictability is, and especially if you're the one in the board meeting getting beat up.
Forecasting revenue.
Yes, there's a lot of personal stakes and pain around that. But if you can move the needle predictably on reducing churn or driving more consistent upsell, cross-sell, and driving growth, that's going to by far have a much more material impact on company revenue, on growth rates, on all the goodness that comes from that. So I would absolutely focus on how can you, one, just understand kind of what's happening in your business and what are the early indicators of churn. And, you know, I think it's tempting because there's a lot of new tools out there that can be really effective at getting your arms around what's happening with customers, mm-hmm. right? And so there's ways to evaluate the sentiment from the calls with your customers, right? And are they happy or are they angry? And what can we glean from that, right? So I think there's a default expectation that if we get better signaling and just understand what's going on and we can interpret that, then we'll be able to reduce churn and manage the business. And I think in some cases, that's absolutely true. Better visibility, better insight can only lead to good things. But I also think there's this kind of false equivalency with, okay, if we have real-time reporting and access to data, we definitively know who's going to churn or not, and we're going to make, you know, investment decisions as a result. But I think there's a missing piece, right? Just because somebody is unhappy on a call doesn't necessarily mean they're statistically likely to churn, right? So I think there's a focus. Right now, there's a focus on the micro signals, which is what are the little things happening with customers and what can we read into that and interpret to try to get better at guessing who is likely to churn or who is likely to grow. I think there's a kind of a missing angle, you know, which ties directly back to the Reef mission, which is, well, can we look holistically across thousands of different signals across the business and truly understand as these signals operate independently and together, which of them actually are the most predictive for future churn events or growth events? And how do these signals combine and play together in a way that gives us really reliable early signal for customers statistically likely to churn in the future, customers statistically likely to, you know, grow in the next 6 months? Because if you can identify, look, of our 5,000 customers, if we can identify the 200 that have the highest statistical probability to grow in the next 6 months, and you can run a targeted upsell campaign into those customers, you're going to get conversion rates and close rates that are, you know, 5x, 10x higher than kind of your status quo leads for upsell, right? So you have to be really surgical and intentional about where you're spending your time and resource, because everybody has less resources to do the same or even more work than they did before. So the ability to get very selective about where they spend those resources, and if they can really tie those to revenue impact, then you start to get the raw materials for these programs that can reliably reduce churn, drive better upsell, cross-sell, and move the needle in a material way on net retention performance.
So I want to click into that use case right there, because I believe, you know, from day one, right, we all start caring about AI, and I talked to a member of companies about what they're doing. So we call this model-driven revenue growth. And again, this to me, this is just was so obvious early on. Historically, you sit there and you have a customer and you say, well, are they happy? Do you think they're going to renew? Do you think they're going to buy something more? And you're talking to an account executive, you're talking to maybe a CSM, and it's clear. It is a game of guessing. I mean, it's like, well, I don't know. I just had a really good call with them and they're really super happy with this. Renewal's definitely coming through. And then all of a sudden, you know, 2 months later, it's like, they don't renew. What's up, right? Everything was always based on like the last phone conversation I had with that customer sort of determines. And what you're putting on the table is, if you look at lots of signals across lots of customers and really drive a model-driven world where the model is getting wicked accurate to focus you, that is a different game. And I still think that there's the majority of organizations don't believe that that's possible. I still hear that a lot. And so I'm curious, how much data, like how many signals do you need in an account? And how far in advance can these models start to say, hey, you're going to have a problem in 9 months or whatever? Just give us a sense of that landscape of what is really happening in the wild when you work with customers and deploy these types of models.
Yeah, it's a great point, because the vast majority of our customers, when we first engage, are very concerned about data quality, data availability. Do we have enough to train the model? Oh, we're really bad at managing our data, right? And so there are some real challenges and inhibitors. And I think we see it in what we do, but I think it's going to be increasingly important. And frankly, it's going to be a blocker of a lot of AI initiatives. It already is. Like, data quality and availability is stifling a lot of enthusiasm around AI, because you might have a very inspired vision to deploy autonomous renewal agents, for instance. But if you don't have an accurate picture of your revenue history with customers, what they've purchased, what they haven't purchased, you know, there's very high stakes. It's not like support agents where they largely lean on product documentation, knowledge base articles, et cetera, to provide a pretty good experience. When you get into these revenue use cases, especially existing customer revenue, so think, you know, renewal, upsell, et cetera, data accuracy becomes much, much more important. So the ability to really have your arms around historical data and what's happened up until this point with a customer, as well as being able to profile what's likely to happen in the future and how that dictates the strategy and the engagement type that you should drive with those customers, just becomes critical in a way that it hasn't been in support agents. You know, there's a lot of energy and moving into other use cases, like renewal is one that I'm seeing frequently now. And so to get back to your question on data, in some ways it's worse than you think it is. But in many ways, it's not as bad, because there is a path. We've proven time and time again that you can actually assemble foundational data that helps these models perform very, very well. And it's data that exists in most organizations and doesn't require a huge broad-based data cleanup exercise as a prerequisite, right? And so as we build our models, what we look at to build that accurate historical foundation is we start with typically CRM data. So we want to understand who your customers are and who your customers have been that may no longer be customers. We want to understand your revenue history with those customers. So from the first deal that you landed with that customer through kind of the most recent renewal, how has revenue changed over time? Has it increased? Has it decreased? How has their product mix changed over time, right? And most organizations are pretty good at having some visibility into that information, because even though a lot of their data hygiene is bad, most organizations do a pretty good job of tracking sales opportunities and at least acknowledging how much were they worth, what did they close for, and then tying that to real kind of revenue data, because they have to make sure that they have reliable revenue data. Many organizations, especially mature organizations, have some kind of way to track, you know, contracts and, you know, what's been quoted and what's been what's been delivered with those contracts, right? So what we do initially is tap into that data, and we use automation to normalize the data. So we bring the CRM data together with support engagement history, marketing engagement history, product engagement history, if it's a software product, for instance, maybe sentiment data coming from systems like Gong or, you know, call recording software. So we do, again, we want that rounded view. We don't just want the CRM data. We want a full picture of what's happening with customers. And then so what Reef is really good at is taking all this disparate, messy data, normalizing the things that are consistently available across these different systems, creating a clean, validated data set. So we'll do data validation and we do anomaly detection. So we'll kind of look at spikes. And if there's something that doesn't look like real business behavior, instead of doing a broad-based data cleanup, we'll come to you with a hit list of, hey, there are 10 things that we found in your data that just don't seem right based on experience. Is there data, like let's say there's a 2-month gap in data. Maybe they changed support systems 2 years ago, forgot to tell us. And so there was a 2-month gap in ticket data that we saw, right? And we'll flag that and we'll say, hey, you know, do you actually have the missing data? In many cases, the answer is yes. If it's no, then we can say, look, there's a consistent enough trend line. We can fill in with synthetic data and still have a pretty accurate picture of what was likely to happen over that period of time, right? So there's a lot of tools and a lot of innovation that's kind of made the data problem. It has to be front and center, and it is something that needs to be addressed. But there are great tools now to hit that head on and fix what's really important in a surgical way and over a couple of weeks, versus having this amorphous kind of broad base. Hey, we're going to spend the next year getting our data house in order before we do any of these really important initiatives. And I think companies just can't afford to wait today. So.
The economics of enterprise tech are breaking. AI startups are threatening the domain of long-established enterprise technology providers. Yet, it is unclear exactly how technology providers will drive profitable revenue in the AI era. TSIA has always been focused on what it takes to have a profitable business model in enterprise tech. AI Economics is a body of actionable TSIA research that is digging into the future of tech business models. How will AI solutions be priced? What does the next generation tech services portfolio look like? And why does TSI believe that it is not the end of tech services, but the era of services? Go to tsi.com/AI economics to learn the answers. I want to click into a little bit more for the audience, because again, with every poll survey we've done, what is inhibiting your ability to move forward with AI? Data is always one of the one, two, or three reasons, right? It's like it is. And so that has been on the table now for a couple of years. Personally, I think there's great irony here because, you know, we deal with the tech industry. So this tech industry who's been selling CRM systems and ERP systems and accounting software, enterprise software for, yeah, you know, 30 years so people could track their data. And everyone's whining going, my data's for shit. It's like, it's like crazy, right? It's like, yeah, it's like, that's why we had these systems, is to be able to get all this stuff. But if you click in, talk a little bit about what, since the first time we talked, yeah, what are some of the tools you mentioned, you know, synthetic data there is an example. What are some of the tools that are emerging to help crack the code on this data problem that's, yeah, making it easier?
Yeah. So I think just the data management tools and platforms themselves have gotten better, right? Yeah. So there's just been advancements in systems like Snowflake and Databricks. Mm-hmm. And so just the way that, because we work with a lot of, you know, public companies and companies that have very high standards in terms of security. So yeah, just sending data willy-nilly to Reef, and in many cases, they don't want us connecting directly to their CRM, to Salesforce, mm-hmm, or to other systems. And so through these data platforms, it enables like zero copy, secure data sharing, where we can really isolate, you know, what do we really need access to and what do we not need access to? In some cases, our customers don't even want to give us customer names. They want to anonymize the data. Yeah. And they want, yeah, to say, hey, we'll just send you IDs and, you know, you can still do your scoring and just send the results back to us and then we'll match them up on our end. Yeah. So there's been a lot that's made it much easier for us to get quick access to data and, mm-hmm, for us to be able to then run our tools to do the validation. Because our goal is we want to create a backward-looking data set for every one of your customers that has an accurate picture of the business that you've done with them to date, right? And this is really around the structured data. As we get into some of the AI and agent discussion later on, we can talk about how you pair that with the unstructured data to create really, mm-hmm, good experiences. But you really need that accurate backward-looking picture of customer data. And what that does, it gives us a high-quality data set to create these future predictions. Yeah. And so with that data, we can do a predictive model on churn. So full churn, for instance, who are the customers statistically most likely to churn 6 months, 9 months, a year from now, and really giving you an understanding of which of the customers are at risk. You know, you talked about innovation. Like, we've done a lot of R&D and innovation on predictive models. I think we might have talked about this in our last time, but one of the things that we stumbled onto was most organizations don't do machine learning-based predictive scoring, but there are some that have their own data science teams and do it. But the ones that do typically will use a binary classifier model to essentially allows you to separate customers who are likely to churn versus customers that are not likely to churn or less likely to churn. Mm-hmm. This is useful, like knowing who your risky customers are, but there's one element that's missing. It's the element of time, because if you really want to maximize your ability to recover revenue from customers that would have otherwise churned, timing is everything, because if, mm, you know in advance of that churn date when their risk is the highest, you can time that intervention at the optimal time to go get that customer back on track in a natural way when you're not running a safe play at the end, yeah, and really start to get them in a better place so they become a likely to retain customer versus a churn customer. And so one of the things we found is that there are model types that come from other disciplines. So we found a model type from medicine. It's a survival model framework that has the element of time. So it allows us to not only predict who is likely to churn, but when they are most likely to churn. Yeah. So we can build what's called a retention curve for every customer that shows their churn probability over the next 18 months. So you can really understand when that risk is the highest and then how you want to schedule that CS intervention or digital campaign or, you know, product prompt that's going to stem that churn risk proactively. And so,
I mean, that's another aspect of, you know, what we call model-driven revenue. So it's not just using these models to forecast revenue, to understand risk, but it's also using these models to time interventions, which is, yeah, what you just said. Because, yeah, again, as we were talking, I mean, resources are tight for most customer engagement organizations or sales teams. And this old world where you get up and you're like, well, I'll try to touch every customer the same amount of times within the quarter or whatever, instead of saying, look, if I've got 50 customers I'm working with, here's the 10 that I've got to be absolutely talking to this month. That's a game changer, right? But I think that is where the game is going to be played. I've said this before on this podcast. I believe both salespeople and CSMs are going to wake up in the morning and the models are going to tell them what to do that day in terms of like, this is the most strategic use of your time. Call this customer or email them this thing or make sure they're signed up for this webinar or whatever it is, instead of them guessing. And again, companies that master this, again, their ability to keep the train on the track for revenue, I think is going to be just so much phenomenally stronger than companies that are still, you know, running the old blunt instrument approach. So can you give some examples on the AI expansion side of it? Because revenue is so important. Part of it is you just were talking about predicting the churn and when to intervene. Yep. But there's also signals that help with expansion. And give me a sense with your customers, how important is the expansion use case compared to the renewal use case?
Yeah, I would say, you know, as we started, you know, churn was really the focus area, but more and more we're seeing customers leaning into these expansion models because there's a lot of pain around churn and it's critical. But in terms of upside and really moving the needle on net retention, upsell is effectively uncapped, right? Like there's a cap on churn. You can only decrease churn so much. And you know, there's a renewal rate can never surpass 100%. But on upsell, there really is an ability to drive much greater gains if you can really crack the code on not just tactical land to expand, but how do you drive customers in a more significant, more predictable way towards higher revenue. Yeah. And so that can really shift things on net retention. And so we're seeing a lot of demand for upsell targeting, for cross-sell targeting, right? Because again, you have data living in your enterprise today that can give you the keys to really understand, okay, how can I deliver my account management team a set of leads that will convert at a 5x higher rate, close at a higher rate with a higher ASP than the leads that they've been getting to date and maybe their organic interactions, right? Like what organization, if we could say, look, we proved through our back testing that these leads are 5 times better than any other leads you have, who wouldn't take those and go run the play, right? So I think there's just an awareness gap that, you know, a lot of organizations just aren't aware of kind of what's possible and the potential that's living within their data to kind of unlock with machine learning to go and drive better predictability. And I think we're seeing it both in kind of driving teams of people. So, you know, Reef was initially created to drive better resource allocation and decision-making with teams, customer success teams, renewal teams, account management teams, right? Increasingly though, we're seeing, look, we're getting more and more into our digital long tail because we have fewer resources to cover customers and we have to rely more on digital engagement. Yeah. And kind of non-CS covered engagement. And we're also seeing people getting curious about how do I complement my teams with, how do I move beyond just emailing customers to using agents and kind of autonomous engagement, right? So when we're looking at both the churn and the upsell scenarios, I think there's a need now to start to think about these multi-channel strategies for how do you engage the right customers with the right
right
plays in the right segment with the right tools in order to maximize what you do around retention and growth.
Because the expansion is not about just, you know, some BDR calling up and saying, hey, we think you're ready to buy whatever. Yep. I mean, to your point, it is touch points where you send them an email at the right time, where you encourage them again to attend a webinar. They're seeing an ad somewhere. I mean, there's lots of different ways that you can nurture that customer on that journey. To your point, if you say, hey, they are really ripe for this conversation. And I'll tell you a cute story just happened last week. I was talking to a CRO and we were talking about this expansion issue, right? He had an objective to grow their, you know, sort of cross-sell, upsell revenues by 30% higher than the previous year, right?
Yeah.
So big, aggressive target. And so I said, so how are you going after that? And he said, well, you know, salespeople on it. And, you know, what really the strategy was, they had like four, they'd segmented all those existing customers into sort of four buckets. I'd call them maybe personas, but, you know, like this bucket, these people have this and this. And that was sort of, okay, so those are the four buckets. And then really the strategy was, we're going to try to sell everything we have to everyone in those four buckets, right?
Yeah.
And I listened to that and I'm like, that's not the mousetrap in today's world. It's what you're talking about. If you have that 30% target, you say, okay, I got to look at that install base and I got to really use the data to tell me, A, what are probably the most winning offers this year? B, who's the profiles that are most likely to really want to lean into those offers? So that C, I can prioritize my resourcing to go after those opportunities first and foremost. That's, again, model-driven revenue, I think, is how the game's got to be played, because we don't have enough resource to just knock on every door.
Yeah, and you can even get more precise than that. We have a customer that, you know, they've got between 5 and 10,000 customers. They acquired another company, you know, a couple of years ago with, you know, probably 3,000 customers of their own, kind of in the same space, right? And so they've been able over the last year and a half to gain some really good win stories and examples of cross-selling their existing product suite into these acquired customers, right? And so what we've done for them is trained a model that says, okay, you have a couple hundred examples of customers who you've cross-sold your core platform solution into these acquired companies, right? Or vice versa, right? So this acquired solution into existing customers. So of our 8,000 customers, who are the ones that are statistically most likely to buy this new product, right? And so what we were able to do is say, okay, well, we're going to profile each of those 200 customers that bought this solution over the last year and a half, right? And so we were going to look at their revenue patterns leading up to that purchase. We're going to look at their support engagement. We're going to look at their marketing engagement, their product engagement patterns. And what's going to happen, because with machine learning, you can evaluate hundreds, even thousands of these points, you know, different time periods, and let the machine determine what's significant in terms of predicting future behavior. And what happens is, with this training, a profile emerges that says, okay, customers with these characteristics are just statistically much more likely to buy the product than your other customers. And what allows you to do is take this universe of many thousand customers that can be overwhelming for account managers that might have territories of 50, 100 customers or more, and really boil that down to, okay, in my territory, who are the 10 customers that I know, if I spend time with them, are most likely to buy this product? And what happens is, it won't work in every case, but it will work enough that the water level will rise, and across the board, you're going to get that 30% increase in upsell, cross-sell, because you're working in a focused, smarter way. You're really, you know, we talk about this a lot, you're moneyballing the business, right? You're now understanding the probabilities.
Yeah.
And if you, in a disciplined way, follow the probabilities consistently, you're going to get better results, even if sometimes it feels a little counterintuitive.
Yeah. So if anybody doesn't know the Moneyball example, that's the Oakland A's. They didn't have a lot of money to spend on players, but they used the shit out of statistics to figure out the best players possible to create a winning team. And they were really one of the first ones in baseball to do that. And then everybody, you know, said, oh, you know, that's the way to go. And that's what I want. Anybody who's listening who owns revenue, you got to Moneyball the shit out of revenue management for sure. Because, I mean, what you were just describing there, also, I want to play, you know, that approach, right? Really looking at tons of data point, getting these models statistically, who's most likely to buy. That's, and put that to the backdrop that we've seen over the past 3 years, the percentage of revenue that tech companies are spending on sales and marketing keeps going down and down and down. They are grinding costs out, and that's a lot of headcount. So pre-2024, you could go into a SaaS company and the quotas for some of these people were not that big. Their territories were small. They were buying growth, right? You could just throw salespeople at stuff and you'd be like, I need more revenue. I just go hire 50 more salespeople. That's what they were doing. Now it's gone, the pendulum completely on the other side. They're taking that headcount out. So if you're now, you own revenue, you have a lot less reps out there working for you. And if they're working in the old world, just guessing, compared to somebody who is armed and dangerous like this, I mean, you're going to lose that battle on on getting revenue. So, you know, you really have to be thinking about how you can get on this train.
Yeah. The, not to be too sporty here, but the Oakland A's analogy is really salient, because we're all kind of the Oakland A's today, right?
Yeah.
We don't have big budgets.
That's
We can't win through outspending. We have to win in the margins. And the more that we understand our business in a way that our competitors don't, and we can use our data, then that's how we win in the margins, set ourselves apart, and be one of the solutions that does command budget while the others are still kind of flailing. So I do think companies that really are proactive here have an ability to set themselves apart and really, honestly, just get an outsized share of the benefit, because early adopters, you know, it'll be standard over time. This will be how everybody operates. But if you get on the train early, you have a chance to stand out while everybody's figuring it out.
Well, and just a quick comment on that. I mean, you know, there's already data that's coming out on the fact that even as we enter 2026, companies that are more aggressively adopting AI, getting some returns, some use cases, there's this compounding factor.
Yeah.
Right. And I bet you, I will bet a dollar you are seeing this with your customers. You've got customers you've been working with for a while now. They got one use case and they're like, oh, I could go after this next one. And so every quarter that goes by, they're getting greater and greater ROI out of AI. And if you still have a ton of companies who are not out of the starting gate yet.
Yeah.
And so the gap between the have and have nots is just exploding. And I think that's going to be one of the big stories of 2026. Is, you know, it's not longer going to be, is this a bubble? I mean, is AI, you know, all these reports, well, there's no ROI in AI. All that bullshit's going to go away. And it's going to be, you know, we're going to be talking about the winners and losers here in terms of performance. Every Tectonic listener is well aware I am a big believer that AI is a game changer for how professionals in the technology industry will do their jobs. TSI Research is not immune to that reality. I am proud to say that we have been aggressively experimenting on how AI can change the way we create research and deliver those research insights to our members. And now we are ready to release TSIA Intelligence, the first Gen AI model designed exclusively for technology services. Unlike generic Gen AI tools, TSIA Intelligence taps into our real-world, industry-validated data that is not in the public domain. We have designed this model to give you clear, actionable, and board-ready insights. Right now, in technology services, the stakes are really high. Every decision counts. Good decisions can build your career. Bad ones can end it. General LLMs are incredibly powerful, but you need specialized insights built on industry data that you can trust. That is TSI Intelligence. To check it out, visit tsi.com/intelligence. You know, one area I wanted to hear from you on is agents, because there's so much talk about agents, and there's, you know, you already put it on the table, you know, in the world of support, it's a great use case because they're leveraging knowledge libraries and they can help a customer really seamlessly, you know, get the right information. But talk about agents to actually drive, you know, NRR, GRR, what do you see in there?
Yeah. So I'm really excited about, I think 26 will be a transition year where people really start to dig in and try to figure out agent use cases around NRR, GRR. And I think really, to me, the holy grail there is that late 26, early 27, there will be autonomous renewal agents, for instance, you know, in the tip of the long tail initially and maybe moving up the stack, that outperform the teams that were managing those renewals before, right? And so that's where I think it's really interesting, because I think the value prop is even greater than what we saw in support, because support is all about cost deflection. If you look at retention, you have the ability not only to reduce cost, more importantly, you have the ability to actually improve gross retention, improve net retention, et cetera, right? So I think there's a lot of potential to start to deploy renewal agents, upsell agents, or agents that are kind of skilled in both, who can directly engage customers, improve their ability to drive good experiences and capture more revenue than kind of the model. You know, in most cases, they'll be initially replacing email campaigns and email marketing systems, et cetera, that have been doing email auto renew, et cetera. But I think that there are some, as we talked about this a little bit before, some really distinct challenges with these use cases that did not exist in support. Mm-hmm. So I think you're seeing some of the big, you know, the big players in the customer facing agent space taking on renewals and retention as a kind of next frontier in use case after support.
Yeah.
And I think there are some real challenges that are emerging around data specifically, right? Because if you don't have an accurate picture of data history and that foundation, the agents can go very, very wrong, right? And so if a support agent gets something wrong, generally the stakes are pretty low. And, you know, maybe it's not a great experience, but it's not catastrophic. If you have an agent that's quoting customers that is reflecting on what they've spent in the past, answering questions. If it's not accurate, then it's not only going to be a poor experience, it could be factually wrong. It could be charging customers the wrong amount or sending them the wrong quote, right? There's a lot of nuance and kind of accuracy that's important. So this is where the combination of accurate structured data and predictions combined with a lot of the unstructured context that makes the conversational relevance and tone much better and more accurate. You really need these things working together. Like in support, you can get by on mostly unstructured data with a little bit of structured data, right? But as you move to retention and growth, you've got to have a much more balanced mix. And so, you know, Reef has been thinking about this problem for a while, anticipating that this is where things are going. What we've found as we've evolved, and what's really changed the most in our business since we last talked, is that from the beginning, we've been supporting teams of people with better decision-making, prioritization, as I mentioned before. What's really different now, though, is we're seeing much, much more demand for Reef's data set as a foundation for these emerging agentic experiences, right? So we've created what we're calling the NRR intelligence graph. And where this comes from is there's been a lot of studies that show that agentic experiences built on knowledge graphs dramatically outperform agents that are built on kind of raw data, right? So again, the idea with this is that we've created this verticalized intelligence graph for net retention specifically, so that if you're building agents on top of the NRR intelligence graph, you're going to get much better accuracy, much better results. You're going to get a profile of every customer in terms of what their current position is and their probability of churn in the future or growth in the future. And so it's a much more complete and accurate view of every customer. And so the NRR intelligence graph becomes the foundation of structured data to fuel these agents that you can combine with then emails and notes and call recordings and all of the unstructured context to create really effective, complete agentic experiences, right? And so it's early days. Like we have a customer, it's a $500 million security company that's really leaning forward and wanting to deploy these customer-facing retention agents. And so we're actually building an agent on top of the NRR intelligence graph called a renewal strategy agent. Because in their model, they have almost 15,000 customers. So they have about 12,000 renewals every year because most of them are one-year contracts. And so previously they had a team that in 90 days engages and starts a renewal process with every customer.
Right, yeah.
Right. And so what Reef is now doing is 120 days in advance of every renewal, this agent is profiling every single renewal. And then based on that profile, it is making a decision about what is the optimal execution workflow for this renewal. Right. And it has a bunch of different options in terms of where it can send these workloads. So the agent could say, look, this is a down the middle renewal, not likely to grow, not likely to churn. We're going to send it to an existing email auto renew sequence. Or maybe we're going to send it to this new renewal agent that's going to engage the customer on this down the middle renewal. Right. But let's say it profiles another customer and it's a, let's say it's a large logo, small existing spend. So they're kind of below the radar right now, but a high probability of expansion in the next 6 months. So the agent would then maybe make a decision to say, look, this is too important to send to an email. I think there's an account manager that needs to take a look at this. Yeah. And so it's going to deliver to an account manager a profile of why they're a good upsell target. And then that account manager will be accountable to go drive an aggressive upsell play on this renewal, right? So there's probably going to be between 8 and 10 different workflow options that this agent funnel, right? But it starts to then do very smart real-time segmentation of renewals and not just batching them based on, are they a big customer or a small customer, but based on nuanced details about where they are at that moment of time and what's likely to happen in the future. And then you can really start to optimize, well, okay, we're going to send them to an email sequence, but we're going to message these emails differently based on if they have some risk or they have some growth potential or, you know, we're seeing some signs of distress or whatever it is, right? Yeah. And so there's a whole new world of possibilities that start to open up that allow you, again, to get much more surgical and specific about your strategies with different customers in a way that scales really, really well to, you know, hundreds, thousands, even tens of thousands of customers.
So if I play back, right, what you're describing, you think about a world where AI comes into play. You've said many times, you know, helping teams make better decisions. So I'm an employee and I'm the first iteration of AI. I'm working with a model that's helping me out, right? I can ask it questions or it can give me guidance. And so then the next click over is, I described, you wake up in the morning and maybe the model literally is saying, hey, this is what you need to do. Prioritizing like that, you know, intervention, go, you know, this account is, you know, is big expansion. And the next click over, you have agents that are just doing stuff on your behalf. And if people aren't, you know, into this, I mean, in the world of coding, what I keep hearing, and that's where I started my career coding, is coders like, I don't actually code anymore. I set off a bunch of agents to do a bunch of shit that comes back to me. Yeah. Like, I'm literally orchestrating agents, right? I'm not like coding anymore. So that sort of scenario is coming to a lot of professionals. So you could be a salesperson and you are dealing with agents which are doing a bunch of this stuff for you, but also coming back and saying, okay, Thomas, this is what you need to do right now. So my question is, because you're watching this on the front lines here, talk a little bit about how companies are getting their employees to lean into this work, because it's a lot different than the way any of us were working 3 years ago. And it's going to just continually rapidly change on the progression I just described. So again, every professional has to wake up and say, I got to be in a world where I'm listening to models, I'm having agents do stuff for me. Talk about how leadership teams help employees want to be part of that world.
Yeah. I think the first element is trust, right? Because these systems are very good at sounding like they know what they're talking about and feeling really good when you read them, but that doesn't always mean they're right. So we spend a lot of time up front on the trust side of things, right? So what kinds of things are you going to be getting from Reeve? Why should you trust them? What is the proof in the way that we trained and developed the models and tested them? What did we learn? What are they good at? What are they not good at right now? And what are you going to have to really start to kind of audit and make sure, right? So, you know, we say we deliver each one of our models with a PR campaign because you can't just throw it in the wild and expect people to trust or succeed. You really have to just be open and transparent about where things are. So I think that's one side of it, is just that transparency and trust building. But I do think what you said is really important, which is this idea of the skills of the past that made people successful are not necessarily the same skills in the future that they'll need to continue to be successful, right? I think across the board, I think it's most obvious right now in the coding example that you gave, but I think it'll absolutely be true in go-to-market as well.
I do too.
Instead of being tacticians and strictly executors, which was good enough in the past, the agents are going to get better at tactics and at executing, right? So I think that the skills that are really required to succeed moving forward are being systems thinkers, right? So thinking about, okay, what is the landscape of capabilities that I can actually put to work for me, either as a leader? So what are the capabilities I want to deploy in my organization? So I have something like a strategy agent that's determining how to send these workflows, and I'm not just mechanically making people day-to-day make choices about where they spend their time. Like, there's something in the mix that's actually doing that. Or even in the individuals, it's like, okay, I've got a lot of individual capabilities that I have access to. Well, how do I refine and tune those and build my own command center or workflow around how to use those together in an optimal way in order to drive the best results, right? So I think it's the people that are lateral thinkers, problem solvers, that kind of really have this kind of systems thinking mindset to say, it's not just about rote execution, it's about taking a step back and saying, okay, how am I going to use these tools together to get the best results? And, I think there's a lot of maybe trial and error early on, like working outside of your comfort zone to do things that maybe are different than you have in the past. But that curiosity and experimentation is going to just uncover possibilities that you never imagined before and really create new ways of working. I think we're still in the mode where people are incrementally applying these new technologies to the old ways of working. And I think before too long, you know, a lot of the old processes are going to be just completely obliterated and replaced with new approaches. And I think we're starting to see the early signs of that, but I think there's a lot more of that to come.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more of that to come. And again, I asked that question because that is another theme I hear from a lot of the companies that I talk to, is this last mile challenge in AI, right? Like, hey, the technology can do all this cool stuff, but really sticking the landing, not only getting the models right and all the things that you've been talking about, but even when you do all that, you've got to get people to lean in to leverage it and use it and make it part of their workflows. you said trust is a big thing there. I think that's a great takeaway for the audience is if you're not establishing trust right away around what the AI can do, why the models are the way they are, et cetera, then the natural default position for, I think, a lot of employees will be mistrust. That's going to be their default position. So I really appreciate you coming back in, man. It was great talking to you. And, you know, this thing just keeps moving. We'll get you back in here in another year, and I'm sure there'll be all kinds of changes then. But I'm going to close with the question of the day here for the audience. And if you are somebody who owns revenue and you're listening, you got to ask yourself, what is the first AI case you're going to deploy in the next 60 days if you haven't done it? Because this is where the game is going when it comes to revenue. Cheers, everybody. One of the main reasons we founded TSIA almost 20 years ago was to establish accurate operational benchmarks for technology service businesses that just didn't exist anywhere. Benchmarking is a killer tool to quickly understand your strengths and weaknesses. Benchmarking sets you on a journey that starts with where you are, points to what is possible, and identifies the business practices that will get you there. That's why I am super excited we decided to offer a free version of TSIA's industry-leading benchmarks with Performance Optimizer. Performance Optimizer is an easy-to-use benchmarking tool you can access from the TSIA website. You can assess operational strengths and weaknesses in multiple areas like customer success, professional services, support services, etc. And the Optimizer results prescribe specific actions to address specific challenges and opportunities. This is an amazing offer, and I am so proud we are doing this for all of our loyal Tectonic listeners who may not be corporate TSIA members. To check it out, visit tsia.com/free.